Many years ago, I saw an article in the Chicago Tribune newspaper. The headline said, City Tries to Pump Up Its Crews Down Under. It was an article about sewer workers. And the Chicago Sewers Department had a new head of the department, and he wanted to have a meeting for all his sewer workers. So all the guys that worked underground and all the tunnels and everything, they had a big rally. This guy was cheering them on. There was a big banner behind them, and he was almost like a preacher. And they were all cheering as he told them how important their work was. I looked at that and I thought, you know, his work is not so different than mine. When people come to church, they've been in some pretty dark and dirty places, and they need to be encouraged. Some offices are as dark as a sewer, and some schools are terribly smelly and unhealthy. And so people come into church, and they have been in this dirty world. They come in also sort of disoriented. When I was a kid, one of the games we would play sometimes is to put our head on the end of a baseball bat like this and then try to walk around it three times. And when you lift your head up, you just stagger around. Well, it feels like sometimes people come to church that way. Life has been so difficult and so disorienting and so dark that when they come in, they really need to be helped. Well, in a worship service, of course, we have the sermon. We have the chance to sing together. There are some jobs in a worship service that I think the pastor needs to do. The pastor doesn't have to lead the singing. He doesn't have to give the announcements. He doesn't have to be the one that prays all the time. But there are some things that I think are really important for the pastor to do, and that's what I'd like to talk to you about in this lecture. They don't happen every Sunday, but they're important. One is what I just call the human moments. Often during announcements, if your church has announcements, they're kind of a bother, aren't they? You'd rather get to the important stuff, and you're telling people about a meeting or not to forget this or that. But announcements are a good time to tell the story of somebody in the church, to congratulate someone. I remember the Sunday that Lowell and Joyce were celebrating their 50th anniversary. They'd been married 50 years. And I asked them to stand up, and we all clapped. And I thanked them for being a good example to us all. Not long ago, one of our ladies, Nancy, retired. She was 82, and she had been a lunchroom lady. She had worked in the lunchroom of a public school. And she had fed all these children, and she had loved children for decades. And finally, she retired. And so I just told the congregation what I just told you, and we all clapped for Nancy and thanked her. There are these human moments that a pastor knows. Somebody else could tell that story, but it's not the same as when the pastor does it. So watch for those chances to tell something about your people. It could be that it's a special time of the year. For example, I remember on a Sunday just when school was going to start. And I said, school is starting. Let's recognize all our teachers and anyone who works in a school or maybe a parent that does homeschooling. Why don't you all just stand and we clap for them. And then I said, let me pray for you before we go on. You want to watch for these human moments in a service. Then occasionally in a church, there are what I call the heavies, the heavies. One of my greatest pastoral regrets goes back to the Sunday in September in 1994. 3 days before, a U.S. Air jet had crashed into the hillside as it was approaching the airport in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, which is where we lived. The crash was only about 20 minutes from where our church was, and 131 people, everyone on board, was killed. It was a beautiful day, blue sky, nothing wrong with the weather, No one knew what happened to that plane. They never really did find out for sure. It just dived into a hillside and everyone was killed. No one in our church lost someone on that plane, or no one from our church was on that plane. But our church was affected nonetheless. One of my men was the gate agent waiting for that flight to come to the gate. One of my men was in charge of that wing of the terminal, and he had to go and meet the families as they came to the airport. He had been in the army in the war in Vietnam, and it brought back all kinds of traumatic memories for him. I had people in our church who had to work in the hangar where they brought eventually all the wreckage with all the human remains and smells and things, and he had to deal with that. That's what happened. Our whole city of Pittsburgh was in mourning. Every evening in the news for a week, they would scroll through all the names of the people who died. It was a terrible time. But that Sunday morning, 3 days later, I prayed for the families and so forth who were affected, but that's all I did. We didn't change our service. I was so set on doing what we had planned that I didn't really change anything very much at all. And later, one of the men in my church said, I wish we could have spent a little more time grieving and praying together and finding help for this trauma. Because a lot of people were traumatized just by the catastrophe. Plus, we had many people who were employed by that airline. And they weren't sure that the airline would survive this catastrophe because it wasn't in very good financial shape. So there was a lot of worry, and I didn't do a good job. I wasn't aware of being sensitive to the need. We've had other crashes. Every church in America, at least, was aware of ministering to people after the 9/11 tragedy. But there was another one, another crash, you might say, in the fall of 2008. In America, at least, that fall, all of a sudden, the stock market and the financial markets all crashed. Things went very badly. People lost their savings. I had a lady in our church who lost, she was retired and widowed, and she lost 60% of her savings overnight. So when people came to church that Sunday, they were traumatized by this. The young people hardly knew it had happened because they didn't have savings. They didn't have money that they had set aside for retirement. And it was nothing to them. They had their jobs and school. But for the older people, it was terrible. Well, I had learned my lesson. And so I thought, how can I help these people on this morning? So when they came, before we started anything else, any announcements or anything, I started by singing a little chorus that we have that says, He careth for you. He careth for you. He careth for you. And I sang that song. Then I just read scripture to them, like I would read at a hospital bedside, some psalms of encouragement and of God's care and His presence. And then when that was done, I sang once more. No piano, no accompaniment. I just sang. I sang, His eye is on the sparrow, and I know He watches me. That ministered to the congregation. I had learned a lesson. Pastors are the ones who have to deal with the heavies. You can't have someone else do that. That's your job.
TBS Seminary is a nonprofit project. Our joint effort will bring about the common purpose of making Christian education available around the world and developing good Christian servant leaders. You have a unique opportunity to partner in this effort through your prayer and or financial support of TVS Ministry. For more information, please visit tvsseminary.com.
There's another more enjoyable part of the job. I think the pastor is the teller of stories. He's the man in the church who remembers the stories of the congregation and tells them. We hear what happens in people's lives, and we have opportunity to tell them. I was just reading a story this week while we were away. a lady in our church had brain surgery. She was young, she's athletic, she was frightened at the prospect of this surgery. And so we've all been praying for her. Many people have prayed for her. And the note I received is when she went into surgery last week, as she was on the gurney rolling into surgery, she put her hands in the air and she said, "My life is in the arms of God, who is the great surgeon." Now that's a story I want to tell to my church. And I'm glad to report that she came through it marvelously and is home and she's recovering. One Sunday, my associate pastor, I asked him if he would just interview one of the men in our church who works with the Gideons. Are you familiar with the Gideons who give out Bibles? They had been at a fair and given out Bibles and seen people come to Christ. So he told the stories of that. One summer, I was preaching on the Proverbs, and I realized that some people really spend a lot of time reading the Proverbs. They read it. They're always reading the Proverbs. So I sent an email to everybody in the church and said, if the Proverbs are especially important to you, would you let me know? And then on Sunday mornings, as I preached through Proverbs, one of the things we did was I had a woman come up, a young woman, whose mother had always read to her from the Proverbs every morning before she went to school. And she told about that. I had another man tell how he had, as a new Christian who was a businessman, how he would read the Proverbs every day and it helped him to think. My role in inviting them up and asking them to tell about this was important. That was a thing the pastor had to do. They could tell their story, but I needed to be the one that sort of connected them to the congregation. We have talked in another lecture about baptism, and we will talk about communion. So I'm not going to emphasize those, but those are pastoral moments. Whether the pastor is always doing those things, that's up to your local church. But these are special times. I love to serve communion because I like to look out over the congregation as people are served the elements. It's really special to me. I love the time in communion, or in a baptism, when I can just talk about the people. One Sunday, it was Easter Sunday, and I had just baptized Drew. Drew had been a prodigal son. He had wandered a long ways from his Christian background and then found his way back to the Lord. And after Drew was baptized and when he stood next to me smiling, I said, "Some of you have a prodigal son or daughter, and I want you to look at Drew and remember that God doesn't give up. He keeps pursuing, and someday perhaps your son or daughter will stand here too." So that was something that only a pastor could really do, I think. Another thing a pastor does, you don't have to be the only one who does this, but is to pray. Pastors pray. We have other people in our church pray as well. Our elders pray. But there is something special to the people when their pastor prays. But one of the things we have to be careful of as pastors is that our prayers aren't on autopilot, that we're not cliched about our prayers, because we can get like that. We can be so used to praying that we say the same things. We're praying for the sick, we say the same things. I think it's important for a pastor or anyone who's going to pray in a public service, if possible, to prepare ahead of time, to just sit and think, what is the Spirit saying? What do I really need to pray for? And to think about this and ask the Spirit to guide so that we pray well. Then there are those occasions where we bless somebody in a service. We commission somebody. Just before my wife and I left for this trip to come here to Cyprus and do this assignment, our missions committee all came up on the platform and they put their hands on me and they prayed for me. Well, there are times in every church when we do that, when we commission someone, where we set somebody apart. Maybe they're beginning a ministry, maybe they're starting a short-term thing, maybe they're the teachers for a special class, and we put our hands on them and bless them. It's one of the things that is unique to the church, the laying on of hands. In our church, our favorite time of blessing, and we'll talk about this a little more in another lecture, is a baby dedication or infant dedication. And one of the things we love is that after I have dedicated a child, then I or someone will carry that child through the congregation while music is played, and people reach out and bless the child. Bless you, Lauren. Bless you, Thomas. Bless you. Bless you. That's a really special opportunity for the church. Anyone can take those children around, and sometimes if we have more than one on a Sunday morning, others do, but I especially love to be able to do that as their pastor. Well, I'll tell you more about that later. I've mentioned in another duty that I love to do as a pastor is a benediction, so I won't repeat that. But these are things that pastors do in a service, and I don't think we should give them up too easily. These are privileges that we have.